WTN.org.
We're the Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, audio and video streaming at WGNSradio.com. This is the Roundtable, a look at the news, views, politics, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
Good morning. This is Bill Krause on the Thursday Roundtable. A beautiful Thursday morning. In fact, it makes you want to sing in the spring. Just makes you want to thoroughly enjoy life. We're here with three wonderful gentlemen that really become the backbone, the heart, the core of this community, Murfreesboro. And I'm speaking about the Murfreesboro Police Department. And we have initially our chief of police, Mike Bowen. And Mike, I'm going to let you introduce your two colleagues here. And I want to have the listeners out there learn all about the three of you, where you guys were born, where you were raised, life, and so forth. Because I think when you put a heart to the face of a police department or public employees, you will be, you know, very, very knowledgeable of them. So, Mike, I'm going to leave it up to you to introduce your two colleagues.
Okay. I'll start off first with Captain Clayton Williams. And our PIO, public safety PIO, Larry Flowers. He's actually the public safety PIO director. So basically, he works out of the police department, but he manages functions for both the police and fire department. Clayton, I'll let you start off with a little your introduction.
Yeah, where you were born, how you got to where you are.
Man, this is only an hour show, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll give you an extra 5 minute override.
So I'm a transplant to Murfreesboro. I moved here in 2004 to take a job here with the police department as an officer. Before that, I was born and raised in a little town called Cowan, Tennessee. Probably most people don't know where that is, a little east of here. Moved here to take the job. Got three kids. Been doing law enforcement since 2001. Trying to think here. So some of the things I do here, recently served in the patrol division for 2 years. Before that, got some experience doing our accreditation policy procedure, and now looking at what's on the horizon there. But it's a great place to work. Glad to be here, and glad I'm raising my family here. Don't really want to go anywhere else. So it's a great place to be.
And schooling?
Oh, sorry. So. Went to high school there at Franklin County High School. I did a little time in college, took a long hiatus, went back, finished my bachelor's degree and my master's in public administration from Tribeca Nazarene University down in Nashville. That hasn't been that long ago, but yeah.
And how old were you when you initially thought, you know, I'd like to be a police officer?
That's a funny story. There was never something that was a long-term dream on the horizon for me. It was when I got out of college right after high school. I did 2 years, took a break, went to work. Had a good job with, they're still here and flourishing, Electronic Express. I was managing a store for them, and it was a good job. However, I just realized that there was something kind of missing, that it was a little mundane, and I wanted to do something a little more that not only paid the bills, but, you know, gave a sense of purpose and community service. So at that time, a friend of mine that I went to church with, they just got a cops grant and were hiring some positions at Franklin County Sheriff's Office then. And luckily was able to, I went and talked to the sheriff. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was really hard to get into the profession because it was kind of a high time, I would say, in law enforcement, a very popular career, very stable. So I went to the jail first. That was kind of where I cut my teeth. And then I knew right away, even in that jail setting, that I wanted to be a police officer out on the street. And the variety of what came along, the sense of, you know, you were really doing something, impacting your community. On the young age, I didn't really see it at first. It was just a lot of fun because it was kind of adventurous, you know. But looking back now and where I am today, I'm one of those folks, I really feel like law enforcement is a calling, and it's something that's serves a higher purpose and really is a direct way that you can impact people's lives on a really on a daily basis, even though it may be small. And then over time, you can really have a large impact with giving back and helping those others that come into the profession and developing those folks as they come along.
And Larry, start with the beginning of Larry. You know, I keep thinking of the old song, and I imagine you remember this, Hats Off to Larry.
Oh, wow.
Hats off to Larry.
Well, you're a better singer than I am.
Oh, no, no, no. Only mouth the words. You were born where?
So I was born and raised in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
A little small town just outside of Jackson there in central Mississippi called Terry. After high school, attended Tougaloo College.
Mm-hmm.
And while at Tougaloo College, I had work study on campus. And my work study was I was assigned to one of the local radio stations.
Great.
Owned by Charles Evers, the brother of Mega Evers.
Very historical figure.
So WMPR Radio, I did a show called Blues at Sunset.
Oh.
And
you got a favorite remembrance of a certain song, certain recording?
Not necessarily any. I mean, I'm just
Aretha Franklin.
Well, this was more of the B.B. King's, the Bobby Blue Bland,
okay.
And you know, artists like that. Mm-hmm. That I played, and then I transferred to the University of Southern Mississippi. And while on campus, I began working at WUSM Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had experience in radio, all of my radio classes I took for my journalism degree, I actually didn't have to take the class because I would teach the other students that came to the radio station. So, of course, those were some pretty good A's in those classes.
Mm-hmm.
So after I graduated, I moved to Texas. And
What part of Texas were you in?
So originally I moved down to Pasadena, just outside of Houston. Mm-hmm. And maybe 2 months later, got my first TV job in East Texas. Wow. So I moved to Tyler, mm-hmm. the Tyler Longview area,
yep.
And began working at KOTV Channel 7, East mm-hmm. Texas News. And that's between, of course, Shreveport and Dallas. And decided to move back to Mississippi.
Were you general reporting? Or?
Well, I started as a photographer, and then I'm the original one-man band. They call it multimedia journalist
now. You carry your own unit on your shoulder.
Yeah. So I was one of the original one-man bands, as we called it back then. So after I left East Texas, went back to Jackson, Mississippi, because I always wanted to work for my hometown TV mm-hmm. station, WLBT. So I went there and pretty much had the same role. I was like the Crime Stoppers reporter, most wanted reporter, and then I got to covering too many people I knew, so I said, it's time to go.
Too close to home.
And so from there, I applied at WSMV and decided I didn't want to report anymore. Just wanted to, because I had a love for videography, so I just mm-hmm. took a job here. Was turned down 3 times.
Wow.
And back then, you know, WSMV was known as a photojournalist station, you know, MPPA award-winning station along with Channel 5, and it was really competitive to get a job here. So mm-hmm. I was turned down 3 times, finally got it, and the rest was history. So started as a photojournalist there, and then we had a lot of reporters to leave. And literally one day came into the newsroom, they had one reporter pretty much all day. And so the general manager called me to the office and said, hey, I know you reported in your previous life. Can you help us out? So I ended up going out to do a story the next day where they sent me to Cannon County, I believe. And there was like one of these roundups where they would go out and serve warrants at mm-hmm. 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But the Simons editor at the time at Channel 4 decided to send me at like 9:30. Well, they served the warrants at 6 a.m.
Oh.
So it's like, okay, are they trying to set me up to fail here or something?
Mm-hmm.
So I went down and, you know, and turned on my charm.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sheriff down there was able to brought me into booking, and so allowed me to get a video of, you know, the people that rounded up being booked. And they said, hey, we have two more warrants that we didn't serve. So I was able to go back out with them. And of course, got back, did the story. Everybody's around the TV station, around all the TVs in the newsroom, like, you know, to watch the story. And then I hear applause, and it's like, dude, I've done this my whole life. Mm-hmm. So, and from then on, I reported for Channel 4 until I left there. I stayed there 14 years.
Wow.
Then I was offered a job at Channel 2 and stayed there about 5 years. Was happy, content, and was covering a manhunt outside of in Stewart County. Mm-hmm. And it was a week-long manhunt. And Susan Nyland, that's with the TBI, and Sandra Brandon, who was with Montgomery County Sheriff's Office at the time, it's like, hey, Larry, Murfreesboro Police has a PIO opening. You ought to apply for it. And it's like, I got a job. And so they're like, look, just apply for it. You don't have to take it. Well, I applied for it and got an interview and got off the job and then turned chief down.
What year was this, do you recall?
This was in 2019.
Okay.
And, well, actually, I was offered it in December of 2018, okay. And I literally turned him down. The thing, what happened was when I got the call for back for the interview with PD, the previous county mayor called me. It's like, hey, we're going to create a PIO position, and your name came up. Can you do an interview next week? So mm-hmm. I interviewed with police in the county on the same day. And then Metro Nashville Public Schools had a position, got a call from Metro Nashville Public Schools.
Very popular.
And then, and it was one other municipality that called me. I'm not going to call any names. It was literally four jobs that I did not apply for or was not seeking. Mm-hmm. And so literally I said, God, what are you trying to tell me?
Exactly.
Literally, that's what I said. And again, county really wasn't offering any money, turned chief down, and then I got a personal call from chiefs like, hey, what would it take to get you here? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so we were able to work things out, and I can honestly say it's been one of the best career moves I could have ever made. Love the city, love working at the police department, love telling the good stuff about the department. And like I said, it's just been a whirlwind, but really, really enjoy it.
I've got to ask you this, though, as you were talking, I thought, here you were looking for the story, mm-hmm. looking at your sources, looking at, quote, what's going to make the story
exactly.
competitive with your competition. And now you went over on the other side and you became the source rather than the responder to the source.
Exactly.
How good of a transition was that?
At first, it was kind of tough. My first news release was 3 pages long.
Wow.
I'm not going to lie to you.
It was sure every newsroom would like that.
Because mm-hmm. I wanted to give everything that I wanted mm-hmm. when I was a reporter. And I thought that, hey, now I got access to it, I can give it. But then I quickly realized, and you know, the chief's like, no, dude, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And I realized that you can jeopardize a case by releasing information.
Oh, exactly.
That, yeah, so literally, you're lucky if you get a half a page now from me. But but it was a big transition because, you know, I just figured give what I wanted as a reporter. But the one thing that I did make a pact with the chief, and during the interview, in my follow-up interview with him, is I'm going to treat everybody equally. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to single out any particular TV station. I'm not going to single out any particular reporter. If you call me with a story that you found out about, I will work with you and you alone. But if it's something I have to put out generally, I'm going to send it to everybody to be fair. Because as a reporter, that was one of the biggest challenges I had.
Sure.
You know, I'm here covering the same story as another reporter, but that PIO would give the information only to one reporter.
And
that
was difficult. And the respect for confidentiality.
Right. So, yeah, so that was one of the biggest challenges, but I quickly learned. The other challenge was when I first started, I would tell detectives, hey, do not tell me anything I cannot tell the public.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm able to put that information in the back of my head, and it stays there, and I only give what I should give, you know, so you're not jeopardizing an investigation.
Chief, what was the strategies and techniques you used to capture Larry from all this competitive job development?
I called him all the time and followed him around town and said, hey, come work for me.
In a unit. And you had the red light
right,
on.
Right.
That's an
good. Followed him to his house and you said, right, Larry, we're going to be out here in the front door.
Thanks for pointing out the point that you turned me, the fact that you turned me down.
You haven't forgiven him for that yet?
No. I tell you, when I took the job in 2017, the PIO position was huge for me. I knew we had a growing city, and just knew that we had to have the right person for that position. And the thing about Larry, and for those who have lived here a long time, Larry was pretty well established in the Middle Tennessee area. People trusted him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to be the face of our organization when delivering news and critical information, man, you got to have somebody that people can trust. And that,
sure.
that was the first thing that I needed, was somebody that people could look at that information and say, all right, I'm getting it from a reliable source. I'm getting it from somebody that's trustworthy. So that was the big one for me. And, I went to the city manager at the time and said, hey, you know what? I'm willing to give up one of my command level positions if you would just let me transfer those dollars to hire somebody as a full-time PIO. And, you know, the rest of the command staff was willing to take on the extra workload, you know, by eliminate that position. But it was just too critical a piece to not have somebody in that position that, like I said, that was trustworthy, that was able to, and in his case, he was able to know both sides of it. And as you can see now, Larry, he's a source for other PIOs. People sure. call him during incidents. I know that he helps teach PIO type things. So it's a win for us all around.
You know, it's kind of interesting, as Larry again was talking, and I was thinking, when we see on TV, primarily national TV, we see a major catastrophe, and we see the chief or the sheriff, we see the PIO, we see the participating leadership and so forth at a press conference, and the public starts to look at body language.
Right.
You know, is this really a truthful? I mean, when I was thinking of the plane crash over the Potomac a couple of months ago, and you're taking a look at the updating from the press, and you're looking at the body language. Larry, how do you promote, provide, and project your body language so that this story is not necessarily in your eyes versus in your voice?
Well, literally, you have to, first of all, prepare. Mm-hmm. And when I teach, that's what I tell other PIOs. If you're not prepared, you know, you're going to look unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically, if you're telling the truth and giving the information, there is no reason, you know, to look nervous or, you know, give off the sense that, hey, I'm not truthworthy. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not the case. So, again, you have to prepare, and I think that's key. And from all the PIO training that I've gotten, if you literally, you know, get your talking points and you stick to them, you know, one of the things, I'll tell you a story. So I was in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
For a PIO training, when we had that homicide on the campus of MTSU after the high school graduation. And I had gone to a Red Sox game, got back to the hotel, and then my phone started ringing. I'm at the Daily Wire, CBS News, Fox News, because the only thing that they heard, shooting college campus, mm-hmm. that was enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so I was able to relax for a minute. And it's like, hey, that's on MTSU's campus.
Yes.
So, you know, it's their case. Well, the problem was, you know, the media had gathered. So they said, hey, someone will be here to talk to you soon. But it wasn't our case at the time because the victim had not passed away yet. But once the victim passed away, therefore, it became Murfreesboro police case because we... investigate, you know, homicides within the city limits, including on the campus of MTSU. And so by me being prepared, I was able to run that crisis communication from a hotel room
in Boston.
In Boston.
Sure.
Wrote up a statement and sent it, and the sheriff's office was generous enough to help us deliver it on camera. And so the next day, got back, talked with the chief about having a news conference, and he allowed me to do it, and we were able to, I was able to deliver that information, even though I was tired, you know, had been on a flight, came right into the situation, and met with the upper command, and then delivered this information. Well, the news conference was at 4:30. At 4:20, we get word that there was an arrest. So thanks to Captain Williams, I quickly changed the lead, said, hey, can you print this? So he was working in the background while I went down to address the media. And so we did that. You know, nobody even knew that we had all of this going on behind the scenes. So I was able to get on camera and deliver that information with confidence.
I hope you share that information with the people you teach, mm-hmm. of in terms what goes on in crisis, mm-hmm. and what does the public need, must, want to know, mm-hmm. right. and how do you deal with that in a most effective manner, because it's those first few minutes, if not the first few hours, where the tone message right. will be accepted. We'll be right back, and we're going to get Chief Bowen to reintroduce himself, since much of the public knows Chief Bowen, but reintroduce himself, how he started in life and how he has grown professionally in Murfreesboro. But we'll be right back after we pay a few bills.
This responsible gaming message is brought to you by the Tennessee Lottery. When you play the lottery, it's important to play responsibly. Know your limit and spend only what you can afford. Set a budget and stick to it. And remember, as long as you're having fun, you're always a winner in our book. The Tennessee Lottery is a proud supporter of National Problem Gambling Awareness Month. To learn more about problem gambling resources, visit tnlottery.com.
Choosing the right insurance can be overwhelming. That's where Rick Hall at Rayburn Insurance comes in. At Rayburn, we're not just about policies, we're about people. Rick Hall will take the time to understand your needs and find the best coverage at the best price. We've been serving our community since 1973. So why not let Rick Hall take the stress out of insurance? Rick Hall at Rayburn Insurance Agency, where you're more than just a policy number. You're our neighbors.
Chip Walters here with Exit Realty Bob Lamb & Associates. I was named a top 10 agent in the number one exit realty office in America in 2021. The top question I get around town, how's the market? Good question. And the answer's changed a few times this year alone. I'd like to know what you've heard and share some solid data we have. Give me a call and let's have a cup of coffee and take a look at what's happening in your neighborhood. All my contact info is right on my website, choosechip.net. I'm Chip Walters with Exit Realty, Bob Lamb & Associates.
This is Good Neighbor Events with Bart Walker. Brought to you by the law offices of John Day and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pests, bees buzzing, rodents running all through my house. Ants chewing wood, and look, there's a mouse. I overrun with pests, pests, but you're gonna be sure. Safe and secure, it's the last rites for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today, 893-7111.
Hey, for over 78 years, WGNS has been letting you know what's happening right here at home. Meet local author James Grimley this Saturday afternoon from 2 until 4 over at the Line Ball Public Library in Uptown Murfreesboro. He'll be signing copies of his newest book, A Route 66 Tale. 2 until 4 this Saturday afternoon at the Line Ball Public Library. The Red Cross is still critically low on blood, so phone the Red Cross at 800-RED-CROSS and make an appointment to give blood at a time that fits your schedule. Or are you new to town? Would you like to learn more about our local history? Well, come on over to the one-room Ransom Schoolhouse this Saturday from 9 until 5. It's all free. The Rutherford County Historical Society will be there to talk local history. That's 9 until noon this Saturday. Ransom School is at 717 North Academy Street. Drop on by. We mentioned this earlier. The 14th Annual Special Kids Race is this Saturday. It's over at Middle Tennessee Medical Center. Those are WGNS Good Neighbor events.
Rutherford weather.
We'll see a few spotty rain showers here at times this afternoon with a blend of clouds and sunshine developing, a high in the upper 70s. Tonight's slight chance for rain early, decreasing clouds, low 54. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS.
Currently, it's 56.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, take control of your account management and energy consumption with the MyMTE app. Download from the App Store and manage your account, improve your energy habits, and more. MTE, serving to make life better since 1936.
This is the Roundtable from News Radio WGNS on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
This is Bill Krause back on the WGNS Thursday edition of the Roundtable as we visit with many, many people in the community every Thursday morning, whether they're in politics or in government or community service or business, social service, and what have you. But we're very, very pleased to have Chief Mike Bowen, who's our Murfreesboro Police Chief, and with two members of his wonderful team. Chief, even though we've asked you this before, and I'm sure it sounds repetitious, but kind of give us a quick bio of Chief and where he was born and raised and grew up, and how he entered into the Murfreesboro Police Department, and your growth and opportunities here.
Wow, it's hard to follow Clayton and Larry.
Well, you do great. You do great.
Wow. I guess I'll start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I was born in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Very historical community.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of, I'm 57 years old. And my
That's mom, a youngster. That's
yeah,
a youngster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, I love buying firearms. So I love guns. I buy stuff all the time. And, where they ask your place of birth. For decades, I've been writing down Fredericksburg, Virginia, and like I said, I'm in my 50s, and my mom, she passed away in December. She was 80, but fortunately, before she died, I just said, "Mom, how the heck did we wind up in Fredericksburg, Virginia?"
Yes.
And she told me the story, the background, and everything, and I can't tell it because I can't make it through the story.
I can understand.
So, yeah. Amazing woman.
Were you raised in Fredericksburg school?
No.
Moved from Fredericksburg?
And that's the tough part of the story about it, how I wound
why
up there.
Left and where you
and,
left.
And how I was there. I should have wrote it out and let Clayton tell it. But long story short, my family. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And there was some question about my viability as a fetus when at a certain hospital. And my dad said, "Hey, we're not going to do what you want to do." So he loaded my mom up in the car, took me to Fredericksburg to Mary Washington Hospital. And they said, "No, he's still alive."
Oh.
And they're able to deliver me and things like that. So I probably lived there 30 days of my life.
Wow. Okay.
And never been back. So,
you appreciate life and how it begins.
Yeah. Especially since my dad was, this was July of 60.
What service was he in?
He was in the Army. This was July 67. He was deploying to Vietnam in November of 67. So the easy choice could have been, "Hey, man, I'm fixing to be out of here, so let's just go with that." So,
sure.
So that's my 30 days in Fredericksburg. But my family... we go back to what's now Cannon County a long, long time. My grandfather was the first one to come over to Rutherford County in early 1900s, 1904, 1905. His father and their family came into Rutherford County and kind of set up shop for the Bowens on my dad's side of the family. For here, I've got an uncle retired from Avco. I've got aunts and uncles that worked at the old Jones Locker here in town. I've got an uncle that retired from the fire department in the 80s when my dad was doing his first tour when he went overseas in the 60s. We lived on Atlas. He came back, went to for a second tour, and we wound up living on South Tennessee Boulevard. So there was a lot of us coming back and forth, especially on the deployments he couldn't go on. My mom, born and raised in Munich, Germany. My brother's born in Munich. My sister's born in Munich. So the only time that we weren't in Murfreesboro is when my dad was doing his military service and we were traveling with him.
Have you been back to Germany? Did you ever visit Munich?
I have not. We lived in Ulm. My mom's whole side of the family's in Munich. Still are to this day. So lived in Ulm. I'd like to go back. One of the regrets I have is I didn't go back with my mom and visit one last time.
Did she cook a good German brats?
Yeah. Here about, I can't remember. Here about 4 or 5 years ago, it had to be 2017, 2018.
It's almost 10.
Yeah, before my father passed. One Christmas, she said, "Hey, I'm doing all German."
And she
brought out her German silverware and dishes and really just, it was all German.
And I bet it was good.
And all the kids and to this day and everybody to this day value that experience. So
you went to high school in Murfreesboro?
Yeah. So dad retired in 1980 from the Army, and we moved, of course. As soon as he retired, he's like, "We're heading back home."
And oh, sure.
We loaded up the 69 Ford Falcon without air conditioner.
All got in a Ford Falcon?
In the middle of summer with no air conditioner and traveled back. My mom did have a 77 LTD
she was living big time.
That did have air conditioner, so you were lucky if you got to ride with her in that car. But we came back, and he just wanted to come home. So he came back, got a job at Heritage Farms, worked out there for 20 years, and retired from there. But like I said, this is my home. We did spend some time away from here. I consider myself from Murfreesboro. Like I said, the times that we weren't here, we were traveling with Dad, but good experience. Went to Central Middle School when we got back, and from there, I went to Riverdale, class of 85. In fact,
it's a reunion. You got they have a major reunion planned, a 40-year reunion?
I don't know.
You're kidding.
I don't know. And, I tell you, I love all my high school friends, everybody I grew up with, but I just have zero social media presence. So I don't know what's going on unless somebody sees me in the store and says, "Hey, by the way."
I would imagine a 40-year reunion.
Yeah. So I'm not connected on social media with anybody. But somebody will call and say, "Hey, dude, you gonna show up?" And I'm so I'll get a call or somebody. I'll talk to somebody eventually, but time goes by fast.
How big was the school 40 years ago?
I don't know.
Was it a big school or was it
I don't know. I can tell you there was just Riverdale and Oakland. I can tell you we graduated around 325 each. So I think both senior classes combined just over 750 maybe. So I guess that's pretty small.
Were you in sports?
No.
Oh, okay. But when did you first?
I liked working.
Okay.
I liked working. I like spending money. So my dad said, my dad said, "If you want a motorcycle, if you want these things, you have to go earn it." Yeah.
When did policing first enter your mind?
It never did. I wasn't one of these guys.
And I'm
brutally honest, and it's just, I never grew up going, "Hey, I want to be a policeman one day." Never crossed my mind.
Years ago, I don't know if they still have in schools, but years ago, elementary schools would award students to play the role of safety.
Yeah.
They had the big sticks, and they would serve as crossing guards and so forth. I had read a study where a safety ultimately became a Marine and ultimately became a police officer. Yeah. And there was a track between a safety in the sixth grade, a Marine after high school, yeah. and a police officer that they showed behavior similarities. Yeah. So you weren't a safety in sixth grade.
No, crossing guard. In fact, a lot of my conduct early on was probably counter to the law enforcement profession.
Motorcycle may have had something to do
with it. Yeah. My driving record wasn't the best in the world and things like that. But I never really thought about it. And I was working at a business, and the business I was working for was great, but it was a seasonal business. And I remember it was around February. A lot of cops would stop in the business and just chit-chat, look around. And I told a real close friend of mine, I said, "Man, dude, I'm so bored." And he's like, "Hey, we're taking apps. Why don't you try it?" And I said, "Okay." And filled out an app and wound up getting accepted. And
what year was this, do you recall?
1988. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're almost on your 40 years in the department.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Wow.
So I would have been 20 starting here,
What was the city and department like in 1988, do you recall? I couldn't even tell you what the population was, but how would you describe and define Murfreesboro?
My guess is, when you look, when we moved from the old building here in the mid-90s, it seems like I remember pulling out a project and our population mid-90s was in the 40s, low 40s. So I'd say when I started here, it was probably 35 to 40 thousand. You could run the city basically 2-4. I think we'd have 2 zone cars. You could run the city with about 6 or 7 cars. You'd had a lot of staffing, whereas now you're high 20s,
sure.
even at some points 30. But it's just a good town.
We've quadrupled, 4 times the 40.
Yeah. If you liked Waffle House and Cracker Barrel, you had 2 places to eat on midnight shift. Not a lot of restaurant choices, so definitely a different city. Great city. I tell people all the time, I feel totally comfortable. If my kids wanted to stay here and raise a family, that's how good of a community we are.
Was your career path like? You went from patrol officer and moved up the ranks?
I've always been in uniform. I never did the detective thing. Mm-hmm. I never did anything like that. I always
he's a traffic officer.
I did, I enjoyed the uniform side, but I realized that traffic was a responsibility, so I did what I needed to do. I was productive in those areas, but it wasn't my focus. I didn't go to like reconstruction school or the FACT team or some of these specialized traffic schools. I didn't do that. But as a field trainer, you kind of have to be a broad in your and how you perform your job duties, and especially when you're teaching newer people that, hey, these responsibilities fall on all of us, not just a specialized unit. So we went from there, and then, like I said, just moved up through the ranks. I've been blessed in so many ways in my career.
And life.
And given a lot of opportunities. I tell people, a lot, this position I'm in, it's a good position. I work for great people. I work for supportive people. I work for a supportive community. It's just it's a blessing.
You've been chief how long?
Since November 17.
Oh,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Long tenure there. Good tenure.
Yeah.
I want to hear when we come back from our break. I want to hear how you identify Murfreesboro today from the law enforcement side. Issues you see, opportunities you see, and challenges you see, the past, the present, and the future. But we'll be right back after these words.
At the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street, we believe in more than just great deals. Every purchase you make helps Greenhouse Ministry serve over 70 families a day, offering hope and changing lives in our community. From name brand clothing to household items or even large appliances, you'll find everything you need at prices that will fit your budget. Plus, 100% of the proceeds go back to the ministry. Visit the Garden Patch Thrift Shop today across from the tall NHC building in downtown Murfreesboro, where shopping changes lives.
This is Kim Dunaway from Sunshine Nutrition Center. You hear me on Monday mornings at 7:20 talking about how to lead a healthier lifestyle. We carry supplements, personal care, and grocery items at both our Murfreesboro and Smyrna locations, family owned and operated since 1989.
Attention! If you owe money to the IRS, this is an urgent message. The IRS is cracking down by sending out collection letters, garnishing paychecks, seizing bank accounts, and putting liens on homes and businesses. They call it enforced compliance, and you better watch out, because penalties and interest on unpaid taxes compound daily, making it even harder to get out of debt. Don't let tax debt destroy your life. You need to call Optima Tax Relief, America's number one tax resolution firm. They're experts in taxpayer assistance programs that can save you thousands if you qualify. A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, Optima's resolved over $1 billion of tax debt for their clients. Let them fight on your behalf, helping to put your tax problems to rest. Call the tax professionals at Optima now for a free consultation.
Call 800-367-6289. 800-367-6289. 800-367-6289.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Premier 6 Theater on Broad in Jackson Heights.
Let's all go to the movies. Let's
check out what's showing at MurfreesboroMovies.com. Popcorn popped fresh daily.
Movies like a good old premium day.
Premier 6 on Broad in Jackson Heights.
Why Boot Barn for your business? Because nothing is more important than your workers' safety and your peace of mind. With a commercial account at Boot Barn, you get a customized program specific to your business. The largest assortment of work boots and workwear for every industry. The convenience of having a one-source nationwide supplier and nationwide customization. You need safety and compliance. We have your back. Commercial accounts at Boot Barn Work.
This is the Roundtable from News Radio WGNS on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
This is Bill Krause, third and final segment of the WGNS Radio Roundtable, Thursday morning edition on a beautiful, getting into springtime or daylight saving time now, and now we're enjoying as we're going to start seeing blossoms come out. We're having a wonderful visit with three of the wonderful Murfreesboro Police Department, headed by Chief Mike Bowen. And Chief Bowen was sharing some of his background, as well as Larry, the public information officer, and the Captain Williams. I'd like to hear from Chief Bowen and joined in by his two colleagues. Today's Murfreesboro, from the law enforcement perspective, we're no longer a suburb of Nashville and middle Tennessee, Davidson County. We're a city that stands by its own, 160,000. A city that its size would be quite relative throughout the United States, or worldly in terms of the size and nature of the city. How do you see the status of the city from the perspective of law enforcement, and how do you see the city coming in the future from the perspective of law enforcement? So, Chief, I'll have you first take a crack at that.
Boy, I like the other questions. They're a lot easier.
Well, are you optimistic about tomorrow?
Yeah, very optimistic.
Okay.
So I think you have to look at it from a national perspective, to where law enforcement is as a profession. And because you could have the climate of law enforcement across the country be good, and if you're having issues in your department, it could be a local issue, but you have to look at the overall climate and saying, hey, are we experiencing some of the things that other agencies across the country are? And that kind of helps you do a self-evaluation. So when we look at our agency, we have to look at the men and women that work at the agency. That's priority number one.
How many do you have?
We're over 400 when you count non-certified positions.
Civilian.
We're about 316 right now out of 331 budgeted. And the reason I'm hesitating is I think we changed some numbers the other day. We're bringing somebody on, lost somebody, but we're around that 315, 316 mark right now out of 331.
Is that about the ratio for a city of this size?
Well, And that's an interesting question because we ran those numbers the other day. So basically, when we look at our staffing, and staffing's been horrible. I mean, I think at one point here a couple of years ago, we were 50-something officers down. And what the challenging thing is let me restart this. In 2022, I went to a school, had people from across the country there, police chiefs from across the country, and sheriff's departments had people from Puerto Rico, Guam, those areas. And before we went to that class, they asked the people that sponsored that course, asked us to turn in what the most pressing issues in law enforcement were. And overwhelmingly, it was recruiting and retention. So mm-hmm. we knew it became, we knew it was a national issue. So we really tried to focus on doing things better at our agency. We looked at things like shift scheduling. We looked at benefits, things like that. Looked at salaries, and we've been very fortunate that our council and our mayor and our city administration have really supported not just the police side of things, but public
all
safety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but public safety in general, including the fire department. So kind of looked at that, and we kind of looked at, hey, where do we need to be? You can have cities that are similar sizes that maybe don't require the same ratio of officers to population. So you really have to, you can use it as a rough measurement, but then at some point you have to look at workload indicators. You have to look at things like that to kind of fine tune, hey, how many people do I really need? So for instance, Franklin may not need the same ratio that Murfreesboro needs, that Knoxville needs, that that Jackson needs, or Chattanooga needs. So you have to look at your city on an individual basis. So we kind of just looked at the big six cities. We looked at Franklin, we looked at Jackson, and said, hey, where do we want to be? Plus we have some other information that talks about staffing for the Southeast region based on and this it's kind of a dated study, but the information's still good. It was 2018, 2019, I think, when the information came out and said, hey, where do we need to be? Some estimates say we need to be at a 2.4 ratio. Some say we need to be at 2.7. But just looking at everything and how we operate, we figured, hey, if we can hit that 2.1 mark and maintain that for the next 10 years, we should be in good straight shape based on our crime statistics, the way our city's laid out, based on the square miles, because one of the factors, you don't only look at crime, you look at a city like Chattanooga, you look at a city like Knoxville, the square mileage they have to cover compared to us is just totally different. You know, you're talking 60-something versus 100-something in some mm-hmm. cases. So there's just a lot of things. But we kind of, looking at all those things, we kind of said, hey, we need to be around the 2.1 ratio. And that's what we're striving for. Right now, we're probably closer than we've ever been to being fully staffed. I think March, we'll be less than 10 short. Mm-hmm. You've got to understand that we have also added positions as well. So 3 years ago, we may have been 30 short on 287 positions.
Wow.
Now we're 5 short on 331 budgeted positions. So we're making progress.
Relationship is a
Yeah. So we still have vacancies, but we're still making progress. And one of the biggest challenges, and this kind of goes back to that school where I was leading into, a lot of people are talking about being short across the country, but a lot of those agencies are not experiencing growth.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the extra challenge of not only facing turnover, but we had to also address the growth of the city. So we had two things, whereas a lot of people were just addressing the turnover and they weren't really seeing growth in their communities. That's something that we had to really address. And I think that nationally, I think a lot of the indicators are that recruitment's improving, retention's improving, and that things are moving back in the right direction. But I know prior to COVID, prior to the that whole 2020, I know that we were making progress then, and then overnight it just tanked on us. So these trends that are moving forward overnight can go
can
back
snap.
The other,
sure.
yeah, yeah, they sure. can go back the other direction. So it's definitely something you need to monitor and keep your finger on the pulse. So,
absolutely. You know, I always say that probably my favorite TV show that I really hated to see go off was Blue Bloods, and did it create an image of You know what it is to be a police officer and the life of a police officer. I personally thought they did a phenomenal job of the insight.
I don't watch cop shows, but I can tell I can tell you this: my wife loved that show.
Yes, she
loved that show, and
you don't watch cop shows, including these ones where they show live chases and.
No.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
I just
You know, one of the things that I have admired about you personally, and admired about the men and women that I have had the pleasure of coming across and meeting, working with in Rutherford County, more specifically Murfreesboro, the ideal police officer has a heart for the victim and a head for the suspect. And I think that combination, and I think when Captain, I heard your early comments, you know, that you have a heart for the victim. You know what the victim may be going through. You've got a procedure, you've got a policy, you've got a process you have to pursue. But the heart for the victim and the head for the suspect. How optimistic are you about, not the numbers necessarily, but the future of Murfreesboro? As you know, we're a interstate community, which means a lot of activity comes right off I-24. That would affect a law enforcement without question. We're a growing county. We're a city that's going into higher density in terms of development. So rather than a single family home on a half acre, you've got, you know, a high rise or condominium with a high density of people. So your demographics begin to change. Are you optimistic of what Murfreesboro will be like 5 years from today?
Oh, absolutely. When you look at our numbers, crime's down this year, and calls for service are down this year. So I take that as a good sign. But like I said, that's a short-term trend. You got to look long-term what the trends are. Like recruiting retention, that can change tomorrow, and things go the other direction and see increases. But and I'm always careful how I answer this question, because we can talk about crime being low, but you know, if you were one of those few numbers that were a victim of a violent type crime, things like that, I never want to minimize saying, hey, we only had so many
one
of these calls.
One because, is one too many.
Yeah, one's one too many. And you know, if you're one of those 10 or one of those 20 that were affected by a particular crime, I never want to diminish that. So I'm careful how I answer that question. But statistically, when you compare us to other cities, we're a good community.
Three of you, jump in on this one if you'd like. A lot of our listeners, parents, a lot of our listeners, grandparents. And if you were talking to a parent or talking to a grandparent, and they were counseling their son or daughter about a professional pursuit, a life pursuit, and I have a number of students both at Mount Lowe and Columbia, and a number of them have talked about law enforcement. What would you tell them that their son or daughter, grandson, granddaughter could take away from being a active participant in law enforcement? It's not just necessarily pay or benefits. What would you say is the true attraction to be a law enforcement officer in 2025?
Yeah. This will be an unpopular comment, but I'm going to make it anyway. When I started law enforcement, man, I would have done it for free. I loved the job that much. Of course, I didn't. I wasn't married, didn't have responsibilities.
Sure.
I just loved coming to work and doing the job, because I think Clayton kind of touched on it earlier. You can make an impact in somebody's life on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, words mean so much. And I don't think people really sometimes understand the full impact of words, but it's pretty humbling when you have somebody 10 years, 15 years that you don't even remember encountering. And they're saying, hey, that night you pulled me over and you said this to me, it changed my life. I said, hey, I need to go in a different direction. And that happens. I've had people that have interviewed to be police officers that have said, hey, you know, officer such and such stopped me one night. I was doing something I shouldn't have been doing. He had a long talk with me. And, you know, I did this in my life. I did this, and I changed course. And now I want to be a cop, and I want to make that difference. That happens. And
sure.
I tell you, that's pretty meaningful, knowing that that's something you could do every day of your life and could have that kind of impact on somebody. It's I don't know what bigger reward there is. It's just doing something good for somebody and helping them out. I don't know.
And ultimately seeing the result of that planting the seed. Yeah, yeah. You planted the seed and then look at the tree 10 years later.
And I get that, mm-hmm. but a lot of times you don't see the results.
No.
A lot of times they're unknown, but they happened. I guarantee you they're happening. And a lot of times you just don't see it. But you can never fool yourself to think that it's not happening.
Well, I recall my first job as city manager, and it was a small community in Southern California. And it was small enough, basically like Clayton, the community you were defining in here in Tennessee, that you could watch generational change. And you could see a child of a police officer, and the child grew up to be a police officer. And you could see a third-generation police officer, and you could see how that was creating a reaction. And it was so heartwarming. And, you know, I almost have to say, Chief, that your role as you express it is not any different than a minister. That a minister may give spiritual guidance, you're giving life guidance that has an impact that spreads.
Yeah. So,
it's very, very meaningful.
Yeah. Well, I think to be impactful in this job, you got to love the people you serve and you got to love your community. That's got to be the first thing. The first trait that you have, and man, if you've got that in you, then you can go. You can do a lot with this job.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank Clayton and Larry and Mike, our chief. I want to thank the three of you for taking the time out of your very, very busy schedules this morning, not only to visit us here at WGNS, but I hope that many of you, most of you, all of you out there, take away from this last hour the fact that we have men and women, the over 300 men and women in the Murfreesboro Police Department, who are not just people in uniform or people in support. They're men and women that give more than just a 40-hour job. They're giving their heart, they're giving their brain power, they're giving their wealth of information, but most importantly, they're giving the protection to 160,000 people of this community. Thank you, gentlemen. God bless you, and keep up the super, super job.
Thank you.
WGNS, Murfreesboro, Smyrna.